and antelopes anxiously anticipating animal anecdotes and anatomy antics. This is Good Job Brain, your weekly quiz show and offbeat trivia podcast. Today's show is episode 178. And of course, I'm your humble host, Karen, and we are your snippy pinnipeds causing a conniption with snippets of catnip and parsnip.
I'm Colin.
I'm Dana.
And I'm Chris.
That was a good one.
Yeah.
Do you guys know what pinnipeds are? They're seals.
Yeah. Oh, that's
They're
a good
like
word.
The technical name for seals.
Huh.
And this episode is brought to you by Squarespace. Their tagline is, you should share your passion with the world by building your dream website for whatever it is.
Wait, is their tagline just, you should?
You should.
You should.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah. That's pretty good. Yeah. And I thought that I should start a blog about, you know, just all my stories of running and all my things, thoughts and failures in running. And I did.
Do they have support for like the little man digging up the road?
And all the under construction. Yeah. No, I wish. Yeah. I can just probably embed that in easily. I'm starting my running blog and I just set it up today and it took me 10 minutes. To get a domain. Of course, the domain I wanted was taken.
What domain did you get?
So I'm calling it Bored to Run, because there is a famous running book called Born to Run. I'm not born to run. I'm bored to run. So it's bored-to-run.com, because someone took bored-to-run.com. But that's okay.
Okay.
And Squarespace handled all the domain stuff. Super easy. And if you want to start your own blog or your own site or your that darned cat photography site, you should, and you can use the promo code GoodJobBrain, one word, to get 10% off your first purchase.
You didn't want to get boardtorun.usa or whatever.
I think I'm always more of a fan of .com. What about you guys?
Yeah.
.net or .com is fine.
Yeah, I mean, .com, I think, won the respectability battle in most people's minds.
Yeah, and I was thinking maybe, like, because I know Google has domain, too, and you can do dot whatever word, but sometimes it's a little bit hard. With muscle memory, you just type .com.
It's hard to explain to people, too.
Yeah.
They're like, what? And then .com at the end of that? And it's
And then .com? All right, without further ado, let's jump into our first general trivia segment, Pop Quiz, Hot Shot. And here I have a random Trivial Pursuit card. You guys have your barnyard buzzers. And let's answer some questions. Here we go. This is from Trivial Pursuit Pop Culture 2.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
These are good for us.
Yeah.
Blue Wedge for TV. What two words can producer J.J. Abrams' kids be heard saying after every episode of Alias and Lost? Colin.
I believe that's Bad Robot.
Yes.
Yes.
Bad Robot.
Bad Robot Productions, yep. The show, the little card.
And then you see the little robot. All right. Pink Wedge for Fad. What Kellogg's protein drink, despite its name, is thankfully devoid of toxic potassium oxide?
Is it KO2 or special KO2 or something like that?
I'm going to give it to you.
Yes.
What?
Special K2O.
Special K2O, of course.
I've never heard of this.
So what special K plus H2O equals a thing. But of course, K2O is potassium oxide.
Which
if you drank
supposedly
a whole
toxic
thing of it,
Okay.
I wonder if they knew and then didn't care, or they released it and they were like, oh, true.
They're like, the only people who won't buy this are like chemistry teachers.
Or
they might, because they might be like, oh my god, this is the best deal on potassium oxide I've ever seen.
If I were a high school teacher, I'd bring it and be like, look, they're trying to kill you.
Have you had this, Chris?
Like, I came up with that.
Oh, that's fantastic. Wow, good.
Because of chemistry.
Right.
Potassium oxide, K.
Good sleuthing.
Yeah. Didn't know that. All right. Yellow Wedge for Buzzworthy? Just Buzz.
Okay.
I assume Buzzworthy. What real-life royal did Marvel Comics plan to raise from the dead for an X-Men spinoff until they got cold feet?
Wow.
Colin.
I'm going to guess Princess Di.
Yes.
Was it?
Okay.
Oh, my gosh.
Wow.
Yeah.
That sounds like in horribly poor taste.
That's not even cold feet. That's like, until someone realized and
what are you doing?
Mercifully saved them from a disaster.
Wonder if she's going to be a zombie.
I wonder
what they were going to do.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. They do a lot of time travel in the X-Men. Maybe they,
that's
I don't know.
But that's raised from
raised
the dead.
From the dead.
Yeah.
She's a vampire. I don't know. Yeah. That's weird.
I think they made the wise choice there.
Purple Wedge for music. Who's it? Quote. Hard out here for, according to 3-6 Mafia's crunk hit, Chris.
A pimp.
Yes, a pimp.
Yep. A pimp.
Yep.
Hard out here pimp. For
a Oscar pimp. Winning.
Oscar winning.
Song.
Yeah. Yes, yep. That's true.
Oh, right.
I would say it's probably harder for his employees. That's my thought.
Counterpoint. That was from Hustle and Flow, yes?
Yes.
Is that right?
Okay. Was it?
Howard.
Yes. Yeah.
Green Wedge for movie. Mm-hmm. What film recreates Anthony Swifford's real-life tedium as a Marine sniper in a cruise missile war?
Hmm.
Interesting.
I mean, yeah, it's the like card can't be current enough to be American Sniper.
No, and that guy's a different. No, that guy
that's
is a
name.
Different.
Yeah,
that's
yeah,
his name.
Chris,
yeah.
Chris something, right?
Yeah. Right, mm-hmm. right, right.
Marine being the big clue.
Is this a movie that we when you say it we're all gonna be like, oh
yes.
Yeah, oh really? Oh,
no, it couldn't be.
Chris.
Jarhead.
It is Jarhead.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Good call.
Jarhead, the nickname
Marines.
For Marines.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right, starring Jake
Gyllenhaal.
Hulin Hile. I think that's how you're supposed to pronounce his name. Jake Hulin Hile. Last question, Orange, for sports and games. What city renamed its minor league baseball team the Isotopes? In honor of a Simpsons episode where the local ball club nearly relocated there. Everybody.
Springfield, Ohio?
No, it's Albuquerque.
Oh, it's Albuquerque?
Yes.
What?
After the famous episode
where
they threatened to move, right?
Oh, interesting.
It is Albuquerque.
Oh, interesting. Oh, wow.
Albuquerque Isotopes.
Huh.
So the team still is called the Isotopes?
Yeah.
Whoa. I thought it was just like a stunt, but now I'm rereading the question. It seems like it's like...
Minor league baseball teams are known for big kind of wacky publicity stunts like this. Oh, yeah. It's like a staple of minor league teams. Maybe someday I'll do a segment on like best minor league. Minor league baseball, it's like a haven for just marketers. Yeah.
Really?
Well, because you got to drum up attention and it's,
see. Oh, interesting.
They do lots of giveaways and stuff.
Yep,
right?
Absolutely. Yeah. A lot of giveaways, theme days. They'll do crazy mascots. Yeah.
Oh, good job, brains. So, Colin, this week, you chose this topic.
Well, I was flipping through the channels a couple weeks ago, I think, when I put these topics together, and I meant to spend 5 minutes watching and then ended up spending about 4 hours watching a James Bond marathon on TV.
Yeah.
So I was like, man, we haven't done like a good just spy espionage kind of episode. Mm. So I thought spycraft would be a good topic.
So this week, it's spy versus spy.
Odds are you won't live to see tomorrow. Secret Asian man, secret Asian man. They've given you a number and taken away your name.
All right, I'll kick us off. So I think it's fair to say that most of what we know about spies is from movies and TV shows. Is that true?
Right.
Yeah. That's all I'm legally allowed to say.
I actually am a deep cover operator.
Oh, wait. Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah. Maybe I triggered more information.
That's a pretty sweet cover.
Yeah. Oh, it's a
deep cover.
Right. Yeah. Yep.
I would agree with that. Yeah, it's movies and general stories.
I don't think I've never met anybody who was a spy.
That you know.
You've never met a guy.
Somebody
a bad
who worked
spy.
For the CIA as an analyst.
Whoa.
It was a strange man. He talked about it a lot for a spy. I was
sure, like, whoa, I don't need to know this.
But I'd say most of what I think I know about it comes from pop culture.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely.
So I have a quiz for you guys. So I went to IMDb and I looked up a bunch of spy movies and TV shows, and I picked the top two billed cast from them. So I'll give you the actor and the roles that they played.
Oh.
And then you tell me what it was.
Okay.
And I think you'll be able to do it, especially the character name helps. This and sometimes it's just like, oh, I know who was in this movie and or this TV show.
This movie and TV show?
Yeah, it's mixed. Okay. It's mixed.
Oh, okay. Oh, good. Okay, good.
Okay, we'll start with the easiest softball.
I know what the easiest
one is. Are we buzzing in?
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, you guys buzz in. All right. Oh, interesting. So, and I'm starting with the second most build or the second build person and then going to the first build because usually the first build is like, you'll know my God.
Yeah. All right. Sean Connery. Like, okay, I know who that is.
Got it. Okay. All right, so first, this one's so easy. It's almost embarrassing. So this one, Angelina Jolie as Jane Smith and Brad Pitt as John Smith.
Oh. I'm so glad you started with this one.
Oh, Karen.
Signori, Senorita Smith, Mr. and Mrs.
Smith. That's a Spanish title, yes. Mr. and Mrs. Smith.
Just get us, get our juices flowing here.
I only watched that movie in Spanish because I was on a plane.
Oh, really?
I saw that movie on a plane as well.
And then the only version they had was like the dubbed Spanish version, so I had to watch that.
You know what, Karen? You didn't miss a whole lot.
I mean, it's an action movie. Yeah. It's, you know, kind
of. It's an action movie and a lot of sexy glances. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Sexy glances. There's a lot of tension. That was where they got
it translates. Yeah. It translates visually.
Yeah. Barbara Feldon is Agent 99. And Dodd Adams as Maxwell Smart. Colin?
That's Get Smart, Get of course, Smart, the TV show.
Yes. Jamie Lee Curtis as Helen Trasker and Arnold Schwarzenegger as Harry Trasker. Karen?
True Lies!
Yes.
The best movie!
Keanu Reeves as Johnny Utah and Patrick Swayze as Bodie. Colin.
The Point Break.
Point Break, of course.
The original. Utah. The original Point Break.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Man, that movie is... I love that name.
Johnny Utah.
Christopher
Gorham as Augie Anderson and Piper Perabo as Annie Walker.
Oh, this is the show.
You know...
Oh, really?
Or USA. One of those.
Oh.
Karen.
Covert Affairs.
Yes!
Wow. I was like, it's some super generic name.
Yeah.
Amazing,
yes,
Karen. Good job, brain.
Yeah.
Yes.
Whew.
Mark DeRay as Rico and Anne Perelaud as Nikita.
Oh.
Chris. Mm.
La Femme Nikita.
Yes. Richard Anderson as Oscar Goldman and Lee Majors as Colonel Steve Austin.
Oh.
Chris.
The $6 million man.
Yes.
Yeah.
Did you say Richard Dean Anderson?
No. Richard Anderson.
Oh.
Richard Anderson. That's why that Richard Dean Anderson is Richard Dean Anderson. Oh, right, yeah. Exactly. Yeah, yeah.
Da-na-na-na-na.
How about this? Richard Anderson as Oscar Goldman and Lindsay Wagner as Jamie Summers.
That's the bionic woman.
Yes.
The Beyonce woman. Yes. That's just a free idea for you, Hollywood. Yeah.
Bionic Beyonce.
The spin-off, of course. And I believe they married in the show as well.
Oh, did they?
I think they did. Yeah. So I loved those as a kid.
So are they both bionic or only she's bionic?
They're both cyborgs to some extent.
Yeah. One is worth $6 million.
The other is worth only 78% of it.
Yeah, $6 million.
Yeah, I never thought about it. I love the implication that they're like, you know what, we can't tell her how much her operation cost. Like, let's call her something different.
Yeah. And they're like the $5.2 million. How about Armie Hammer as Ilya? And Henry Cavill as Solo.
Oh, I know those actors, but
right.
Oh, and it was like a period piece, right? Am I thinking of the right one?
Yes.
Oh,
period.
It was called. Is this like G-Men or something?
No.
Oh, okay. I'm thinking of the wrong movie.
I believe there was a TV show also.
Oh man.
Mm-hmm. Well, wait. What's the second billing character?
Oh,
Armie Hammer.
Oh, it's Armie Hammer.
Oh, I remember this show. It was not on for very long, right?
He's on Lone Ranger.
He had a big year, I'll say. It's the man from UNCLE.
That was
way off.
Yeah.
Okay. Not even close.
Bill Cosby as Alexander Scott and Robert Culp as Kelly Robinson.
That is I Spy.
I Spy. Bruce Boxleitner as Lee Stetson and Kate Jackson as Mrs. Amanda King.
Oh.
Wow!
That is Scarecrow and Mrs. King.
Yes.
Oh.
The Mrs. Amanda, Amanda King was... You Mrs. remember that show, The
nope.
Scarecrow?
That was a hit. That was a hit show.
I only know Bruce Boxleitner from Tron and from Babylon 5.
All right. This is one of my favorite movies, embarrassingly, or not embarrassingly. I just love this movie. Samuel L. Jackson as Mitch Hennessy and Gina Davis as Charlie Baltimore. Karen.
A Long Kiss Goodnight.
Yes.
Oh.
She was a sleeper agent. She had amnesia. Yeah. She was a spy.
And she kicked so much butt.
Yeah. Good. That was a good soundtrack.
Mm-hmm. How about Scott Glenn as Ezra Kramer and Jeremy Renner as Aaron Cross?
Oh,
that must be the Bourne. Oh, geez. The Bourne Legacy?
Yes.
Okay. Legacy. All right. The Bourne Legacy.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Last one. Alec Baldwin as Jack Ryan and Sean Connery as Marco Ramius.
Sorry, buzz too soon.
That's okay.
What? Hunt for the Red October.
Yes.
Close.
Hunt for Red October.
Oh, okay.
Well, we've already established that we'll give you the 98% at this point. Karen was nice enough
to give hunt?
Me. The Hunt for the Red October.
Yeah. The Hunt for Red October. Not Hunt for the Red October.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I knew what you meant.
Yeah, we know you know. We know.
Special K02. Close enough for good job, Brandon.
That's right.
Good job, you guys.
All right. How would you guys like to be spies for the next 5 minutes?
I want to be a spy.
Sure.
Would you like to be word spies?
You tricked me.
I don't know.
Yeah. Oh.
Okay. Well, what's up?
Fun fact.
You're a big nerd. What are you going to say?
You know how earlier in the show, Chris, you joked about being undercover?
Yes.
So your cover is... So I learned that your whole actual backstory and the printed documents and all of the quote, fake physical things to prove your cover is called a legend.
Oh, it's called a legend?
So yeah, your cover is your identity, but everything that supports like the tangible artifacts.
The stuff
artifacts.
Documentation.
Yeah, it's called legend.
That's awesome.
I like that word.
Yeah.
That has nothing to do with my quiz. Here is my quiz. Here is the spy game that I have concocted for everybody because I know you love word games. I know that I love word games. And I know that you tolerate word games. You are going to be spies, sneaking under cover of night, infiltrating these sentences and obtaining the valuable item that I have hidden in the words of this sentence and, absconding with it. Into the night. I have inside each of these torturously constructed sentences that I have created are valuable items. Maybe they are gemstones.
Okay.
Maybe they are precious minerals of a sort.
Okay.
Hidden within the words.
Something worth stealing.
A couple of words. Something worth stealing. As a spy.
And
bring it back. To your country or whatever it is that spies do when they steal. Right, valuable. Yes, so that I will give you the sentence and then hidden somewhere in there will be some sort of incredibly valuable item that you will want to steal and remove from the sentence.
Okay.
And you can tell me what it is. So for example, because this was by far the worst one of these that I came up with, which was the sentence... And it is an incredulous question, which is, why would Bob Sapp hire a bodyguard?
Sapphire.
Indeed,
the word sapphire is hidden in the sentence. Why would Bob Sapp hire a bodyguard?
S-A-P-P.
Then who would know? Yeah, exactly. So I will give you the sentence, and you, very much like finding sapphire in that sentence, will find whatever other valuable item I have hidden in there. Here we go. Go ask the guru by the river. Whoop. Dana.
Ruby.
Ruby, indeed.
Oh, guru by the guru. Okay.
Yep. You can teach a new dog old tricks. You can teach a new dog old tricks. Colin?
Gold.
Gold. You can teach a new dog gold tricks. Mm-hmm. This is something you might type into Google.
Okay.
What are this year's top Aztec baby names?
Topaz.
Yes, Karen. Yes.
Top Aztec baby names.
Great.
For 2016.
You want to get the current list.
Yeah.
You don't look like a jerk with the old list.
Some of these are just so dumb. I can't believe I'm going to read them. All right, here we go. I took my crayons and drew a splat in umber.
Platinum.
Yes.
Platinum.
Mm-hmm. You say crayons weird.
I say crayons.
No.
Wait, what did I say?
You said like cranberry, crayons. Like crayon.
I think I do. Crayons. Yeah, that's very where I come from. We say crayons. Okay.
Yeah, I think that's regional. Yeah.
Crayons.
Okay. Because I was like, I didn't.
It is regional. Crayons. Okay. Yep. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. This is me talking about a recent recipe that I made. I added basil, very finely chopped.
I
think we all got it at the
same
time.
Saying it,
Silver.
Silver, indeed, yes. His name is Philip. Phil to pals. Dana.
Lapis? No. Phil.
His name is Philip. Phil to pals.
Phil. Oh!
Karen!
Oh. Opal!
Opal!
Oh, oh man. Pals.
You're looking at the Philip Phil, but it's really...
There's a lot of red... There's like all the filler red herrings.
There's tons of red herrings. Woo. It's true. Yep, you got it, though. Okay, two more. All right. My favorite name and pharmacy are Alex and Rite Aid, respectively.
Alex and Rite Aid?
Colin?
Is Alexandrite?
Alexandrite! Is a birthstone, yeah. You come up with that sentence, I dare you.
Alex
and Rite Aid, respectively.
Rite Aid.
Yes. In case you don't have a Rite Aid in your area, they intentionally spell it wrong.
R-I-T-E-A-I-D. Yeah. Yes. All right, finally, and this next sentence is absolutely a true story about me. Mm-hmm. I have a cold and I am on Dayquil.
Oh.
Dana.
Wait. Diamond? No. Yes. Diamond.
Diamond.
Yeah.
I have a cold and I am on Dayquil. That's the best hidden one, I think, of the ones that I wrote.
Oh, you don't like Alex and Rite Aid?
That one traverses a lot of words.
I do my best. That does. Yeah,
it does.
It's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 words.
Wow.
Actually. Yeah.
Gotta be a talented word spy to get in that many words. I was trying to extend your metaphor.
I know, you're really good.
I was trying to work.
Man, yeah. Boy, do I appreciate it.
carrying water for Chris's quiz here.
Well, great job, word spies. You're all top word spies.
Great.
Yay.
Crack the code.
So, of course, you guys know, but I don't know if our listeners know, that my day job, I work for a company called Twitch, and we do streaming video games, and lately we've been doing some cool marathons.
Yeah.
We did a Bob Ross marathon.
Yeah.
That was very popular, and most recently, to celebrate our food streaming arm, we marathoned Julia Child.
Yes.
Yeah. From her black and white show to color.
Awesome.
Yeah, it's super awesome. Julia Child, probably one of probably I would say the mother of cooking shows.
Definitely.
I mean, there are other people who probably had cooking shows, but she really made it a thing.
For sure.
She was a personality, really a force, and she was the one who brought French cuisine to like the home cooks and home chefs,
and just with a very you can do it attitude.
Yes, not elitist, and you know, no. she's quite the character. So during this marathon, I keep seeing in chat and elsewhere, people keep spewing out this fact. Well, before she was a chef, mm-hmm. She worked as a spy,
right?
And I was like, okay, what did she do? So I researched more. So Julia Child joined the OSS, Office of Strategic Services, and began her career as a typist. So she wasn't like a spy, more of like a secretarial role. But because of her education and her experience, she was getting promoted and she was kind of brought into teams with more responsibility and being involved in a lot of research projects. So one of her research projects, she was an assistant to a bunch of scientists who were trying to develop a shark repellent.
Oh, okay.
She did a lot of projects, but this was her more well-known was on this team to develop a shark repellent.
Really?
Okay.
All I can think of is like Batman with his bat shark repellent.
Yeah. I think about like, oh, and then her next project was attaching lasers to sharks. Yes.
Like, to their freaking heads.
I'm just imagining day one and somebody sort of like pulls back a curtain. It's just a bat with a nail through it. Yeah. It's like, here's mark one.
Yeah.
Shark repellent.
Does this work? Yes.
Yeah. No. Yeah.
Okay. I don't really understand shark repellent at all. Like, other than from the Batman shark repellent clip, or, I mean, I didn't know that much about it.
I mean, they can smell really good, right?
One would think you need shark repellent because you're stranded in the ocean, there's sharks around you, you need to, like, have shark repellent so sharks go away.
Yes.
Sure, that is a use, but the main use is of shark repellent is so that sharks don't mess up your stuff. So this is in the 1940s when Julia Child was working the OSS for the shark repellent project. Their weapons targeting German submarines and U-boats. They didn't want they're trying to find shark repellent so that the sharks won't interfere. Not saving people from sharks, but it's more saving sharks from messing up, you know, all the spy stuff.
Oh, interesting.
I read more about shark repellents, and that's true. A lot of the shark repellents is to save sharks, is not to save humans.
You're trying
to get the sharks away from a certain area.
Dangerous things.
Dangerous things. Mm-hmm. And then I fell into this research hole about shark repellents, and there are different types.
What is a sign that says, go away, shark?
That's mark two.
It doesn't work that way.
Right. Yep.
So guess what's the number one thing that sharks don't want to deal with?
Oh, interesting.
What do you think sharks don't want to deal with?
What do sharks like not want to deal with?
Killer whale.
Killer whales.
Killer whales?
Sharks don't want to deal with dead sharks. When they sense a dead shark, smell, sense, whatever.
They just beat it?
They're just like, nope, this is, nope, I gotta get away.
Right. Because whatever killed that shark
is gonna kill me.
Right. Better safe than sorry.
So I know the zombies are coming as well.
Yep.
The zombie sharks.
Oh, this is, is exactly like what they do in Walking Dead. They coat themselves in zombie parts.
Yeah.
It's not a secret. Anybody who's involved in, like, fishing or whatever know that sharks don't really like dead sharks.
Okay.
However, finally, after World War II, that's when people really researched more about it. But there are also different types of shark repellents. Sharks are really unique because they have how they sense things is through sense of smell, but they also have electroreceptors. And so a lot of shark repellents are magnetic or electrical that
like
kind of mess with their electroreceptors.
Interesting.
That kind of like wards them off.
Huh.
And then you have the more chemical ones where they have now isolated the different compounds that make
that dead shark smell.
Yeah. So that's why a lot of shark conservation societies and groups use chemical shark repellents to try to save sharks.
Like,
hey man, don't go over to this place where they're trying to test out mines or whatever. But and it doesn't hurt them. Right, because they smell dead shark, they're like, "I'm out of here." You don't have to like tase them, or you don't have to hurt them. Mm-hmm. Is it interesting? Sharks hate dead sharks.
And this, and Julia Child then
worked on it on a recipe early. Tea.
Oh yeah, I thought she put it in her cocoa vat. Yeah.
I had always heard that factoid that she was a spy, but I don't think I ever bothered to look exactly how she was
a spy.
She's
not going undercover.
Fancy dinner party seducing the foreign minister.
Thanks, Julia.
Thanks, Julia. What you do is you add the dead shark smell
right in their face.
Well, so as I mentioned at the top of the show, the James Bond film franchise was sort of the inspiration for my suggesting the topic. And I think you guys will also agree that for whatever reason, just James Bond is just really overrepresented at pub quiz questions. I feel we get a lot of James Bond.
It's one of our weakest, not weakest, but it's one of those things in the camp where we're like, we really should know this.
Yeah, I think so. We always were like, it's which one or how many? So I put together a high-level quiz for you guys about the James Bond franchise. Mostly the movies, but some about the books as well.
I think out of all of us, you probably know James Bond the best.
I think I would know it the least.
All right.
I
Well, we can use this as a study guide then. Okay. This will be great. All right. These are things which could quite plausibly show up at your pub quiz. So as you probably know, James Bond, the movies, came from the novels written by Ian Fleming. There have been far more movies than novels. There have been 26 James Bond movies since Dr. No, including Dr. No. 24 of these are the Eon Productions, sort of, you know, generally considered the official James Bond films. There were two others that are James Bond, but sort of off to the side. And we'll talk about those later. So of those, over the course of those 26 James Bond movies, there have been seven actors portraying James Bond.
Oh, man.
So I need you guys to name for me all seven. If any of you think you can do this yourselves, man, more power to you. You guys can also break it up amongst all you right. as a team effort if you would like.
Okay. Sean Connery.
Seven actors. Dana claimed the easy one. Okay. Sean Connery, yes.
Roger Moore, Sean Connery.
Timothy Dalton.
Pierce Brosnan. Pierce Brosnan.
Yeah.
Daniel Craig.
Okay, you've got the easy ones.
Yeah. Okay.
So you've got five of the seven, and now we're going to trick.
What was the Casino Royale was like a comedy, the first one.
Yeah,
was like,
yep,
was it
you're right.
Peter Sellers? Or
oh, you're was so, the, was yeah. He, oh. he was in the movie.
Oh, he was.
You have the movie right. It was David Niven
in
Casino Royale, which, Chris, you are correct, was done as a parody. That was one of sort of the two non-mainstream James
Got
Bond
it.
Movies.
Okay.
Long story short, they didn't feel they were legally on solid enough ground to make it as a straight James Bond movie.
Huh.
Oh, okay. God. There's one more.
And he was in one James Bond movie.
Officially.
He was in On Her Majesty's Secret Service.
Uh-huh. George something?
Uh-huh. Oh, Karen, it's in Karen's punch bowl.
God, it's in the punch bowl. God, George.
No.
Lewis.
Oh, I think it might be
Lazenby.
Yes.
Okay. All
good
right.
team effort. Guys.
What is it? George Lazenby.
George Lazenby. Yeah.
Okay. I've definitely heard that before.
So, yeah. Sean Connery was in the first five Bond films. Then George Lazenby, and by all accounts, not the best. So they basically lured Sean Connery back for one more movie in the official run.
And then it was Roger Moore.
Roger Moore actually did played James Bond more than any other actor. He was in seven movies.
Mm-hmm.
So I was at the movies the other day and they had the before movies trivia. And the question was, who was the shortest actor to play James Bond? Do you guys know?
No, who was?
Out of those seven?
I'll guess Timothy Dalton.
No. Daniel Craig.
Really?
Yes.
They can do a lot with CG though.
He distracts you with muscles.
So they say that actually David Niven, who played Sir James Bond in the parody Casino Royale movie from 67, he was said to be Ian Fleming's first choice.
Yes.
When they were actually casting before they ended up with Sean Connery. Yeah, back in Dr. No.
Sean Connery, Ian Fleming thought he wasn't urbane enough. He was a bit too rough, but then that was kind of the sex appeal of Sean Connery at that time. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, it's funny. Yeah, he very much like imagined Bond as, you know, he was dashing, but he was also kind of just plain. You know, he could blend into the crowd if need be.
Okay.
All right. We have had this one probably three or four times, and I would venture we get it right about half the time and wrong about half the time.
All right.
In which branch of the armed forces did James Bond, the character, serve before becoming 007?
Before becoming
Chris.
The Navy.
It was the Navy.
Okay.
All right, good.
Yes, specifically, he was a Royal Naval Reserve Commander.
Right.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. The American Film Institute, their lists that they put together on their 100th anniversary are just a wellspring of pub quiz material. So the AFI's 100 years, 100 quotes, the top 100 movie quotes of all time, as determined by them. There are two quotes on this list from James Bond.
Yeah.
For one, imaginary point each.
All right.
What are the two quotes from James Bond? Sorry. Dana.
Shaken, not stirred.
I will give that to you. Yes. Yeah. The fuller quote they have it is a martini. Shaken, not stirred.
James Bond.
And the correct, and Bond, James Bond. Those are respectively from Goldfinger and Dr. No, both spoken by Sean Connery.
Huh.
Yes.
Oh, so Bond, James Bond was in the first James Bond film. Gotcha.
Yes.
Okay.
They get that one out of the gate right away. Right. Some variation of the word kill or Die appears in the titles of 5 James Bond films. So again, you guys feel free to tackle this as a team if you like. Karen seems very confident.
Here we go.
Please tell me as many of these 5 as you can.
A View to Kill.
Correct.
Die Another Day.
Correct.
Live and Let Die.
Yes.
License to Kill.
Oh, yeah, License to Kill.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
That's no Die Nor Kill. Wait, how many?
5. So we've said A Live and Let Die, A View to a Kill, License to Kill, and Die Another Day.
Tomorrow Never Dies.
Yes.
There we go.
Karen, absolutely incredible. Yes, Tomorrow Never Dies.
I know the 90s Bond titles, but yeah.
Two of those were Roger Moore, Live and Let Die, and View to a Kill. We got one Timothy Dalton in there, License to Kill, and then 2 of them were Pierce Brosnan.
Pierce Brosnan,
Tomorrow Never Dies,
yeah.
And Die Another Day. They really fixate on the...
Yeah, of course, that was the Tomorrow Never Dies was an accident, because they were going back and forth between Tomorrow Never Dies and Tomorrow Never Lies, and they decided on Tomorrow Never Lies, but then they accidentally typed Tomorrow Never Dies.
Really?
Yeah, mm-hmm.
All right, last one here. After writing 9 of the James Bond novels, author Ian Fleming switched gears to write this popular children's novel. Karen.
Chitty Chitty Bang Bang.
That is Chitty Chitty Bang Bang. Yes. And sadly, I learned this. It was published just a few months after he died of a heart attack.
Oh.
And the really sad thing was it was like, you know, he had essentially written it. You know, it was suggested that he write a kid's book for his son. It was very bittersweet. Yeah.
Man.
So he never lived to see it actually, you know, be published and become a beloved hit. But yes. And then, of course, made into a movie famously with Dick Van Dyke as well. So, all right, that was just a little smorgasbord of potential James Bond pub quiz pitfalls.
Delicious.
You're right. It is a well of trivia.
Yeah.
It is a well.
It really is.
Because there's so many novels, so many movies, so many actors.
By the way, to fulfill my promise, right? So Casino Royale was one of the 2 non-Eon Bond films. The other one was Never Say Never Again, which was starring Sean Connery, but was not produced in the mainstream of the Eon productions, right? Yeah.
Isn't that Justin Bieber movie?
His name was James Blob, just to get around the...
James Blonde?
Blob, I said. James Blob.
Blob.
James Blob.
All right, let's take a quick break. A word from our sponsor.
Hello, I'm the Boogeyman. Terrifying people around the world as a monster is a nice, stable profession for me. But not many people know that I am also an artist. Mostly oil pastels mixed with my salivic acid, but I did experiment with sculpture during my time at Sarah Lawrence. Splitting my time up between my passion and my job of frightening children from under their beds at night is not easy. Therefore, I'm always looking for life hacks and services that help make life efficient. In order to share my art with the world, I used Squarespace to build my portfolio, pre-made and ready-to-go slideshows that are as slick as my slime-covered talons. Make your own website today for a free trial and 10% off new accounts. Head over to www.squarespace.com and use the code GOODJOBBRAIN, and you too can pursue your passion.
And we're back. You're listening to Good Job Brain, and this week we're talking about spies.
I have a story about a real spy, or actually not really, but a man who was really accused of being a real spy.
Mm.
This man was accused by Fidel Castro of being a spy for the CIA. And this man's name was Antonio Proyas. He was a political cartoonist born and raised in Cuba. And by the 1940s, he was basically one of Cuba's top political cartoonists, writing for El Mundo, one of the best newspapers in Cuba, and, drawing really these scathing political cartoons about figures of the day. And then Fidel Castro came to power in the 1950s, and he drew some scathing cartoons about how he didn't like Fidel Castro. And Fidel Castro was like, yeah, we don't really like you, and I'm going to accuse you of being a CIA spy. And
spy for the U.S.
Yeah, exactly. Or whatever, you know, just a spy. Yeah, exactly. Antonio Proxias was like, pretty much noped right out of Cuba at that point and headed to New York. I mean, basically where he was like unknown, right? I mean, he had received the National Association of Newspapers in Cuba, like, award for best political cartoon a couple of years in a row. He was very famous in Cuba, but it was like, I'm getting out of here.
Right.
Yeah.
Went to New York City with his family and, just started knocking on doors, trying to sell some of his cartoons now in America. And it was unlikely that he'd be able to, I mean, he spoke no English. So it was kind of difficult for him to do this, but he brought his 14-year-old daughter with him to the offices in New York City of Mad Magazine, and he handed them some cartoons that he had drawn, and they were called Spy versus Spy. And this was a poke back at Fidel Castro for calling him a spy. he said later in life, the sweetest revenge has been to turn Fidel's accusation of me as a spy into a money-making venture. these cartoons, which featured a couple of little pointy-nosed dudes who were the black spy and the white spy, and
they had zoot suit hats.
Yeah,
they
did.
Yeah.
They had black trench coats and pointy hats and pointy noses, and they would basically invent ways of torturing each other basically trying to kill each other.
Wordlessly, indeed.
Everything was totally in pantomime, which was great because it made total sense, because now he could do his comics even though he didn't actually speak English and have them kind of translated for an American audience. Mad Magazine loved them and started running them, and that was the beginning of a beautiful relationship between Proxias and Mad Magazine. And he drew Spy versus Spy until his retirement in 1987.
Wow.
You know,
absolutely. I remember it was in every issue.
It was in every issue, one of the longest running features. Now here's something really interesting. It was based on a character that Proxias had invented in Cuba called, this is great, This almost sounds like something out of The Simpsons. The character was El Hombre Sinestrio, or the Sinister Man. And it looked just like one of the spies. It had the pointy nose and the hat.
Oh, I didn't know that.
But the thing is, this guy would, he was just a jerk and just did horrible things to random people. Mm. And so to tone it down a little bit for Mad Magazine, he had two spies doing the same things to each other. Some of the Spy versus Spy comics, I mean, he basically just like redrew the El Hombre Sinestrio like plots.
Oh, interesting.
But it was only known in Cuba at the time. And so basically it was the two spies doing bad things to each other rather than like randos on the street, just like gleefully murdering them. Yeah.
And toward the later years, right, they brought in, sometimes it would be Spy versus Spy versus Spy.
Yes, the gray spy.
The lady spy. The green M&M spy.
Who represented sort of this sort of anarchic force that jumped in between the black spy and the white spy. And she often won. And the both of them would try their tactics of blowing each other up, but then she would kind of come in and upset the apple cart, as it were. But yeah, I mean, you know, everybody remembers this if you read Mad Magazine, during that entire, I mean, just 60s, 70s, 80s, did tons of them. You know, again, he signed his name in Morse code on every strip, you know, just as another little dig about how he was a spy, you know. he retired in 87. His health was declining. And I mean, at that point, it was taken over by other artists and writers. And I mean, it still runs in Mad to this day, the feature. Yeah. So, I mean, they never stopped doing Spy versus Spy. They just kept doing it after his retirement and after his eventual passing 10 years later. Like, that is, it's so synonymous with Mad Magazine.
Yeah.
I mean, they made video games out of it.
Yeah.
They animated Spy versus Spy on Mad TV. It was the feature of Mad Magazine that, like, you know, kind of moved to other mediums more effortlessly.
It's been parodied into third, you know, levels of things. Yeah.
Yep. Proxias occasionally did other stuff for Mad Magazine, but it was basically just Spy versus Spy.
Yeah.
He lived his life as he was an exile, and I mean, he could not, all the Mad Magazine artists would like go on vacations together, like to other countries.
He couldn't go.
He couldn't go because if he left, he wasn't entirely certain that he'd be able to come back to America.
Right.
Oh. Yeah.
It's interesting that he was able to kind of parlay that terrible experience into
a money making.
That's great.
Yeah.
So we've established I love spies, and you guys already know that I love cats.
True.
Yes.
So I think you see where this is going. I want to share one of my absolute favorite trivia anecdote stories with you guys. And I have to say, as much as I love the story, I need to tell you right up front, it does not have a particularly happy ending.
No.
But it is my duty as a good job brainer to share these stories with our favorite listeners. So speaking of the Cold War tensions there, Chris, let's stay in the Cold War era. So travel back with me to the 1960s at the height of the Cold War between the U.S. and the feared communists in the Soviet Union. In an effort to stay one step ahead of the Soviets, of course, agents at the CIA were always busy developing new modes of spycraft, right? You know, from the pretty straightforward to the frankly, bananas.
There are a lot of bananas.
Man, I think it's like when you combine virtually unlimited funds with super imaginative, super paranoid people, yeah. I mean, yeah. You can do incredible things.
Mm-hmm. You gotta cover all the bases.
Yeah, really. You really gotta cover all the bases. Yeah. So I want to tell you guys about this is a CIA project that unfolded over the course of several years to the tune anywhere from 10 to $20 million invested in this project called Project Acoustic Kitty. And that is the name.
Man. Official name.
This was a plan to turn cats into spies.
Yes.
And I don't mean like the, you know, the fedora and trench coat and, you know, handgun variety. I mean more like a mobile.
That's so cute though.
Yeah. Little tiny little kitty trench coat. No, this is more like they wanted to turn cats into mobile eavesdropping.
Like
kits.
Drones, okay. Basically.
Yes.
But they're
yes.
Cats.
Like a yeah. ground-based
yep.
drone, right?
Ground-based
so much
drone.
Sense.
1960s yeah. era, right.
Be crazy not to.
Yeah.
Right. Well, because, I mean, like, really, when you think about it, what animal is easier to work with than cats? Yeah. If you're going to, you know, if you're going to put $10 to $20 million into something. Yeah. So as I say, so really what the CIA had in mind is they needed a way to spy on Russians living in Washington, D.C., right? So this would be, you know, people like working at the embassy, foreign service officials, sure. People who they're around and they reasonably suspect there could be connected with the spying apparatus going on at the time. So they developed a plan, right? You know, this is, say, early mid-60s. Uh-huh. They wanted to surgically implant listening devices and transmitters into cats, okay? To use them, as you say, a fairly low-control drone. It's exactly what I just said. They developed a plan to surgically implant a radio transmitter, very tiny little radio transmitter. It would go at the base of the cat's skull. They implanted a microphone in the cat's ear canal. And they would run a transmitting wire basically out the cat's body, along the cat's body, up into the tail, which makes sense. Uh-huh, you know, if you're going to use the transmitter, use the tail, use what you have. Batteries, of course, to power the whole system.
Which were shoved up the cat's butt.
This is, you know, like the thing is now I'm thinking, I was like, oh, I bet you can do a, like actual really micro like tech.
Oh,
right,
yeah.
Right, right. This is like,
oh, yeah.
It's like a little backpack on a
tape recorder.
Yeah. The cat has to have like training wheels to hold it. Yeah.
Like a rectangular cat.
We've embedded the world's smallest computer into this ordinary seeming cat. It's
making like whirs and ticks. Yeah.
It's like 2 feet tall. No, I'm actually glad that you say that though, Karen, because like, it's like, yeah, it seems like, oh, today would be no problem. I mean, like,
we microchip
my cats have microchips, literally
right,
have microchips
right, right. Yeah,
in their
your
skin.
Your cats, your literal cats are bionic
have
cats
far
with microchips.
More advanced technology.
Right. Yeah. You could use them to spy on your enemies.
It was a challenge, yeah, to come up with a system that was small enough it could fit in the cat, and wouldn't, you know, like, irritate the cat enough that the cat's like pawing at it or scratching at it. Yeah.
hence leading to the popular expression, yeah, but can it fit in a cat?
That's because this is a cat size Walkman. That's why it's that size.
They're so flexible and they live
right,
in the,
right, right.
They
yeah, aww. Again, right. Let's sure. choose an animal just that so, once yeah. a day covers its entire body head to toe, right, with its yeah. tongue.
Yep.
So this is the plan, right? Okay, so we'll get the tech in the cat, and then we will train these cats right. to basically go to a specified location
yeah.
and just kind of park themselves and just act as a movable bug.
Just act natural.
Just yeah. act natural, right. So the plan actually worked. I can't believe I'm saying this. I can't believe I'm saying this, but the plan actually looked like it was working pretty well in the early tests. They could, in fact, train the cats to go a short specified distance away and then sit down. Okay. And if you've lived with cats, that's impressive, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And not only that, but they had to work with, as I say, getting the system in the cat and stay, you know, not getting irritated, staying focused. They yes. found that as they
yeah,
started.
Yeah, what if there's like squirrels and stuff?
They found that as they graduated to more and more real world tests, the cats would get distracted yeah. and be hungry. So I've been unable to find the exact details on this, but multiple sources report that they performed another operation on the cat basically to control its hunger
oh.
to make it easier to train and stay on task. So they chose for their prime, you know, Agent Zero, they chose a shaggy hair, kind of a longer haired cat, so they could weave the antenna into the fur.
Okay.
So, yeah. Yes. Quick question. So, yeah. I assume that the benefits of having a cat is that they're quiet.
Yeah.
They're sneaky,
yeah.
But it's not like the machinery is dependent on their sense of hearing or anything, right?
No, absolutely
it's
not.
It's just that they're stealthy.
It's that they're stealthy and maybe not so obvious because if, you know, honestly, you're thinking, who in their right mind would send a cat as a bug? This can't be.
Well, who in their right mind would, like, let a feral cat into their house while they're having a private meeting?
Or well, just outside.
Well, that's a good point, Data. And I should be clear, these weren't, like, they weren't going to send them into the embassy. The idea was that they could stake out public locations okay. where these assumed spies might be sitting mm-hmm. and they would send a cat over to basically harvest some data so they don't need to know ahead of time where they're going to be meeting. Again, I can't believe I'm saying it. It advanced far enough to actual field tests. Like okay. they were confident enough with the lab test they could get the cat to go and sit. They had the batteries, the transmitter, everything. It was wired up. Kitty's ready to go. They're like, all right, so we're going to a park? Public yeah. park in Washington, D.C.
Oh, no.
So they've got the band. They got everything wired up. And so their plan is they're going to send the cat over to a bench where okay. two sort of marks are sitting and just see how it goes. So they pull up. They're all stealthy, CIA. They open the door. The cat hops out, starts to head across the street, hit by a taxi.
No. Oh, my God.
Immediately killed.
Oh, poor cat.
Poor kitty. Yeah. And I say, I warned you there was not a happy ending to the story.
Why did they put it in the so busy street?
They trained it to do everything except for to watch
avoiding
out for
avoiding cars.
Yeah.
Right, right. So, yeah. So this is bad, right? Because first of all, this is your plan is not unfolding the way you need it. But now you've also got all this technology. So they had to wait until they could sort of discreetly
retrieve.
Poor dead kitty with all the equipment inside because, yeah, you don't want, you know, the Russians finding this gear out in the street.
Yeah, on roadkill.
Yeah. So now I should say that at least one former official disputes this part of the project. He says, according to him, Project Acoustic Kitty, no, he's like, they just discontinued the program. It wasn't very feasible. We took the equipment out, sewed the cat back up, and everyone lived happily ever after.
No.
Yeah. Knowing the CIA, I kind of doubt that personally. So hilariously to me, some redacted CIA documents that were released confirm that this actually happened. This was an actual government plan. I'm reading from a PDF here of these CIA redacted documents. This is Views on Trained Cats. Our final examination of trained cats convinced us that the program would not lend itself in a practical sense to our highly specialized needs.
I told you that on the first day.
On the first million.
Not a lot of cat owners.
Yes, and they talk about how, you know, the training was actually pretty good. And then it says, you know, this is in itself a remarkable scientific achievement, knowing that cats can indeed be trained to move short distances and approach targets.
Yes,
the program was dismantled not long after the failed field test.
I was hoping we would have something on this episode about, like, you know, crazy spy equipment.
That's some crazy spy equipment.
Yeah, I got what I wished for, apparently.
Hey.
Yeah.
Yep.
your parents' tax dollars at work.
Oh, my God.
All right, my last segment. I have a music quiz.
Oh. Okay.
We had Colin's James Bond quiz, and one of the more iconic and memorable things about James Bond movies is the theme song.
Oh, yes, of course.
Almost every single James Bond movie has a theme song that's usually sung by a famous person at that time. They all have a spy feeling. And there's been, like you said, 20-some James Bond movies. And so we know a couple of our recent hits.
Like Sam Smith just won the Oscar for his James Bond song.
Yeah, and Adele also won an Oscar for her Bond song, Skyfall, and then the Sam Smith one was for Spectre.
Right.
Not all of the James Bond themes are hits.
Not all of them can be Live or Let Die.
Yeah. Of course, many people know that Shirley Bassey is kind of the classic James Bond theme song singer. She's done three. Goldfinger, which is probably the most James Bondy like classic.
It's just from that era.
So here I have a music quiz. I have picked a couple of these James Bond theme song singles. All of them are by famous artists.
Okay.
So these five songs are sung by famous performers.
Okay.
I need you guys to write down number one, who the artist is. And they're all famous.
Okay.
All famous. I need you guys to write down what movie was it for.
Okay.
Jeez.
And I purposely edited the song so that it doesn't say
the title.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's not like Adele sings Skyfall. And you're like, what movie is that from? Here we go. Number one.
And love is a stranger.
Is a famous performer.
Yeah.
Okay.
And maybe it gave you a hint to what era, based on the quality of the recording. Fun fact, this is the first time an American performed the theme song.
I'm going to be so bad at this quiz, I think.
All right.
Answers up. Colin.
I've got Nancy Sinatra from Russia with Love.
I put Dusty Springfield, Die Another Day.
I put Pat Benatar.
Yeah.
But then Die Another Day.
Isn't Die Another Day a later one?
I don't know.
She said the word day, and
Die Another Day is a Pierce Brosnan one.
That is a later one, yeah.
Whose song, Die Another Day, is Madonna.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Okay.
Well,
which is not on
that.
This quiz, yeah.
My very, very first thought was Madonna, but then the era didn't sound right.
Okay, so what is it?
It is Nancy Sinatra and You Only Live Twice.
Okay.
She is the first American singer of the James Bond movies. Shirley Bassey is Welsh, and the other singers before her were also UK. Another fun fact about You Only Live Twice. Roald Dahl wrote the screenplay.
He and
Fleming actually were
Buzz.
Kind of cut from the same cloth. Yes.
Yeah.
Right.
All right. Next James Bond theme. Dunna, dunna.
Comes the morning.
very 80s.
It's if you were to guess a band who is so 80s, who has another song which is the 80s anthem.
Oh.
What band would you put down?
See, interesting. I think I might be right for the wrong reason, maybe. Okay. Well, we'll find out.
Well, now
I'm wrong for the.
Also, don't forget the movie as well.
Yeah, 80s James Bond film. And
who knows?
And you know, 80s James Bond is a little hard to. A black hole knowledge.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Like, this song doesn't even sound James Bondy at
no,
all. Yeah,
no.
Yeah, this is like, hey, who's big in the 80s? Let's get them. Answers up. Colin.
Duran Duran for View to a Kill.
So you said 80s, and I was like, Flock of Seagulls, Kill Another Seagull.
But that's your movie title, Kill Another Seagull.
I have no movie title, but I just put Men at Work.
It is... Aha!
No.
Yes!
Wow.
Turns out they had another song other than Take On Me.
Yeah, no. And
what
then,
movie was that?
And this was for...
The Living Daylights.
Yes, yes.
Wow.
Which is the name of the song as well.
Wow.
I did not know
right,
that was a movie.
Right.
Yeah, me neither. Until I did the research. I was
never
like,
heard that
oh.
Before.
And Colin... Duran Duran did do a James Bond theme.
Yeah.
And it's A View to a Kill.
I think it was A View to a Kill.
Also extremely 80s sounding.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Next one, performer and also the James Bond movie. Here we go. I would say this is probably my favorite James Bond theme.
Okay.
I'm just writing down random things now.
Okay, answers up. Colin.
I've got Radiohead and Quantum of Solace.
Okay, Dana.
Soundgarden. And then I couldn't guess.
Chris.
I put Huey Lewis and the News and A License to Kill.
Maybe you'll hit the combination. I don't know.
Maybe. I don't know.
It is. Well, Dana's the closest.
Oh,
it is Chris Cornell.
Yeah.
Lead singer of Soundgarden.
Oh.
But this is just him from Casino Royale.
Okay.
Oh.
I knew it was I knew it was one of the first
the modern
Craig ones. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yes.
That makes sense, actually.
If
I thought about it, it would have been like, oh, it has to be.
It had a great intro sequence. It had like the cards and then the poker. Very cool.
Yeah,
all right.
Kind of driving. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Next James Bond theme.
He knows the meaning of success. His needs are more, so he gives less.
All right. Answers up. Colin, you said.
Speaking of Welsh entertainers, I put Tom Jones and Thunderball.
Dana?
I put Tom Jones and then I Faster Pussycat. Is that a thing?
It is a thing, but it's not a James Bond thing.
Chris?
I put Isaac Hayes and Octopussy.
You're just like your punch ball. You just dry random thing.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Throwing it against the wall.
It is Tom Jones.
Yeah.
Thunderball.
Oh, okay.
Oh, nice.
Good job. Woo. Good job.
I'll take it.
Is that a future sport? Or what is that?
It's like what is
it's like pyramid?
I put Pussycat because Tom Jones has. Because
Tom Jones,
Pussycat.
Okay.
Also, Octopussy. Yeah. Pussycat.
Right.
James Bond is so gross. That's why I don't watch it.
Last James Bond theme. Here we go. Artist. There's two names for the artist and also the movie. Here we go.
Another gun thrown down is surrender to Kuwait.
A woman walking by, a drop in the water, a look in the eye, a phone on the table, a man.
singers. Huh.
This is a weird one because I had no idea this song came out. I had no idea.
These are two singers.
Two singers. A random pairing.
Okay.
Chris, answers up.
I put Avril Lavigne and Meatloaf from Quantum of Solace.
You got the movie right.
Oh, yeah?
Quantum of Solace.
Hey,
it is not
board.
It's not Avril Lavigne.
1 out of 10 points.
That's really good. That's good. Yeah. I'm impressed.
All right, Dana, what'd you put?
I was like, Beyonce did a song. Was this the Beyonce song? Maybe I'm misremembering this. And Lenny Kravitz. Lenny Kravitz.
Those are two smart guesses from the
Yeah.
No.
At first I had Pink and Shakira, but then I'm committing myself to Pink and Christina Aguilera from Quantum of Solace.
It is Quantum of Solace. Yeah. It is Alicia Keys.
I was going to put that as a joke, and then I went with Avril Lavigne. Okay.
Okay.
And Jack White.
Oh.
That beat makes sense. Yeah.
That beat makes sense.
That's a very Jack White.
I had no idea they paired together because, you know, usually the James Bond theme songs, they at least will, like, the video they'll drum up some.
Right.
I mean, the Pierce Brosnan one, all of them were, like, big hits. Yeah. But this one just, it missed my radar somehow. It's like, Jack White and Alicia Keys, when? No one knew that this happened.
I had to get
Quantum of Solace because by process of elimination,
you know,
we know it's not Skyfall, it's not Spectre, and it's not the new Casino Royale.
Right.
Good job.
If I had 20 minutes to think about it, I would have come to the same conclusion. To really think about it.
That was good. That was good.
Good job, you guys. So yeah, these are not the two famous ones, but these are also not the...
These are the ones like where the artist, like at the end of the year, they get the royalty check and they're like, oh yeah, I did that. Chris Cornell going out to the mailbox. What is it? Oh, it was for that Bond thing. Yeah, right. Yes, right.
That was a fun afternoon.
Yeah.
Oh, James Bond.
I'm surprised no Carly Simon. I mean, maybe you consider that to be too famous.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
The Spy Who Loved Me,
which is in the lyrics of the song.
And then, you know, but though, that was a good example of one where I feel like that crossed over into just a full on legitimate early hit.
It absolutely
hit.
Was. Yeah, and it's on all her greatest hits, whatever. Yeah. I mean, that's,
Did Beyonce
not a lot
do
of people.
Oh, was that for Austin Powers?
Yeah.
Beyonce did do for Austin Powers.
Right.
And Pink Panther.
No, okay. But that's not.
Right. Not for Bond.
James Bond.
Yeah.
Yet. Okay.
Yeah,
I mean, it's probably going to happen.
I don't know anything. Yeah, I don't know.
You know what?
Yeah.
Probably.
And that's our show. Thank you guys for joining me. And thank you guys, listeners, for listening in. Hope you learned a lot of stuff about espionage, about training cats, about Bond, James Bond, and more. And you can find our show on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, Spotify, and on our website, goodjobbrain.com. And thanks to our sponsor, Squarespace. And we'll see you guys next week.
Bye.
Spy.